Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see a Jew.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahn, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
I'm Leo Phillips, host of This Must Be The Gig. We're a weekly podcast that documents everything about the world of live music. Speaking with choreographers, costume and set designers, the people who run beloved venues and festivals, and, of course, speaking with musicians about that one gig that changed their lives. Get your peek behind the curtain at consequenceofsound.net, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's an audio interview series presented by WFPK Independent Louisville at WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound and the Consequence Podcast Network. Go ahead and take a moment right now. You see the subscribe button? Hit that. We do these several times a week. Would love for you to keep up with the series. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, the legendary Roger McGuinn. You know him famous of the Byrds. In fact, we're going to be talking about a very special Byrds record. It's the 50th anniversary of Sweetheart of the Rodeo, and he's teamed up with fellow former Byrd, Chris Hillman, to take it on the road in celebration of the album. McGuinn and I are going to talk about what prompted the tour, also how the band went from psychedelic to Americana country in about 4 months back in the late 60s. We also discuss his covering Dylan through the years, Petty's love of the band. And then, as a bonus interview, I'm also going to include one with Chris Hillman that I recorded late last year. But for now, it's Kyle Meredith with Roger McGuinn of the Byrds.
Hi, Kyle. What's up?
First off, I'll mention you're coming to Louisville, back to Louisville, Brown Theater, this coming Monday, October 1st. And what's the deal? You're playing the Sweetheart of the Rodeo in full, right? That's the deal of this tour.
Yeah, we're doing that. We're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Sweetheart of the Rodeo. It was recorded in 1968 in Nashville. Chris Hillman and Marty Stewart and his fabulous superlatives, and I'll be there too.
Yeah, Marty Stewart, by the way, I'm a huge fan of all of you, and hearing that Marty Stewart is who you picked to kind of help you out on that, what took you his direction?
Well, I met Marty back in the year 2000. It was a movie shoot for Dolly Parton. She was in a movie. Marty was a master of ceremonies on the movie, so when Dolly was doing something else, Marty and I went down to a little creek and started playing together, and I found out that he knew all Clarence White's licks. He had a Martin guitar with a B bender. It makes it sound like a steel guitar like Clarence had. And we were playing songs from The Sweetheart of the Rodeo, You Ain't Going Nowhere and Pretty Boy Floyd. And I went, wow, this guy knows all these licks, you know. And we've been friends ever since, and we worked together a couple of times. And I've been on I was on his TV show and, you know, played at the Ryman a couple of times with him in Nashville. And so he was a logical choice for this.
Yeah, and the man can do anything. He really can. One of the most versatile players out there.
Yeah, he and the fabulous Superlatives are incredible. They're like the studio guys, you know. They're like the Wrecking Crew, so total, you know, like 18 stuff.
You know, I mean, different albums with different sounds have had their time. You know, as it's written in history, this wasn't the biggest, you know, success right out of the gate. When did you start to notice that the album was finally finding its crowd and becoming sort of what it is now?
Yeah, I think it was a bit ahead of its time. It took a while to catch on. we were watching the Rolling Stone 500 Best Albums of All Time chart. And over the years, there are about three or four Byrds albums in that group. And for some reason, Sweetheart of the Rodeo rose to the top of that. So I think it got up into the 117 at one point. So that was the reason we decided to celebrate that album as opposed to any of the other Byrds albums. I think it was groundbreaking. It was something so different. People didn't get it at first, and then it was inspirational to a number of people that, you know, they went that direction after hearing it.
You know what blows my mind really about this is what it's only 4 months separate the end of the recording for the Notorious Byrd Brothers and the beginning of Sweetheart. But it's an absolute sea change. I mean, just taking a listen to something like Artificial Energy and Space Odyssey and then anything else that happens on Sweetheart of the Rodeo. I mean, usually bands take years to kind of make that shift. It seemed like it took you all days. How did that happen?
Well, we just took a hard turn, and we fell in love with the music. That's what happened. We'd always dabbled in it. And that in the show, we're going to show you how we played country stuff before we went to Nashville and recorded the Sweetheart album. But we did Porter Wagoner's Satisfied Mind on the second album on Turn, Turn, Turn. And Chris Hillman wrote Time Between and Old John Robertson, and I wrote Mr. Spaceman. And so, you know, we were into country music before Graham came along, but Graham was a spark plug. Graham Parsons was so in love with country music, it was infectious, and we decided to go to Nashville after meeting him.
And maybe it was the right time for you guys, too, because I know the band was sort of in flux with members in, members out. Did that leave the opportunity to sort of, you know, recalibrate everything on a dime like that?
Yes, it did. Chris and I were the only surviving Byrds, and we needed somebody to fill in on the rhythm section. So we got Grandma. I asked him if he could play some McCoy Tyner-style piano, and he sat down and played some Floyd Kramer-style piano, and it sounded really good. And we thought, wow, you know, this guy's got talent. We can work with him. I didn't know he was going to turn into George Jones in a sequin suit, but that's not a bad thing.
There's been some talk on some of the songs on the record, too, like The Christian Life, how it was sort of deemed uncool for rockers to be singing about that. Did you ever find that hypocritical, though, that everybody was sort of into religion? It was just different religions? I mean, everybody was into what was happening in the East. This just happened to be, you know, something that had been around in America for a long time.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people in the 60s threw out the baby with the bathwater, and we just, you know, started going from scratch, trying to find what was really true in the universe. And I even dabbled in Eastern religions, and so did my wife. And we both came to Jesus in the 70s, so, you know, we've been there ever since. So I didn't really know what I was singing about on Christian Life when I sang it on the record, but I do now.
And another one of those songs, of course, is kind of fun to look at. 100 years from now, you're halfway there.
Yes, we are. It's a halfway point to 100 years. That's a good observation.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to sing that in 50 years from now. That's what it's going to be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm not sure I'll be around then, but it's an interesting thought. Yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of some side to this album here that I wanted to ask about as we close up. You know, you made a lifetime with all of these amazing albums. There would be these Dylan songs sprinkled throughout. Did it ever get to a point where you didn't ask that man, why don't you cover one of my songs on your record?
Well, Bob doesn't usually do other people's stuff, although he did a Gordon Lightfoot song. I thought that was interesting, but for the most part, he doesn't. He's written 5,000 songs. He doesn't need anybody else's material.
I just figure you've done so many great things with his. Like, I think he owes you one at this point. That's all.
I don't know. You know, we've had a friendly relationship all these years. He's kind of like my older brother.
Well, I got to tell you, out of all of them, I think maybe One More Cup of Coffee, when you covered that one, it's that became one of my top 20 favorite songs instantly with your version of that.
Oh, thank you. I had fun doing that. Calexico is a great band. They sent me a Pro Tools session, and I put my vocal over it, and it was really fun.
No, it sounded great, and we're big fans of them around here, too. The other thing, I had Hillman on my show a few months ago, well, when he was promoting his solo record, and he made a comment at the end, and I kind of wondered your take on it, too, because we were talking about Tom Petty, and he said, Tom Petty was probably the only person who could have got the Byrds back together. How do you...
You know, I don't know if that was his goal in life, but the problem with getting the Byrds back together is, you know, it's just really, I don't want to do that. I think this is something different. This is a celebration of one of our albums, and it's not really a Byrds reunion. And to do a reunion isn't something I really want to do. I love doing my solo stuff. I do like a one-man play, and that's great and fulfilling. And this is really a lot of fun with Marty and Chris. And, oh, by the way, if you want to say hi to Chris, I got him on a walkie-talkie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Hey, Chris, I got Kyle from Louisville, a radio station. Want to say hi?
Hi, Kyle.
Hey, Chris, it's good to hear from you again. We're looking forward to having you back in Louisville this Monday.
Looking forward to coming, Kyle. Thank you.
Okay, that was Chris. He's following us, and we're caravanning up to Boston today for a concert tomorrow.
Oh, that's that was really cool. Thank you for that right there. That was a fun moment.
Oh, you're welcome. That's fun.
Yeah. So I will. So even if Petty called you, if you were still around and said, hey, Roger, man, it would mean the world for me. Would you do it? You would probably have said, nah, it's probably not going to happen.
No. Yeah. I've had everybody. You know, I've had Ahmed Erdogan and all the big wigs in the record business. I've had a lot of big wigs try to call me and tell me to get the Byrds back together. So I've had a lot of people wanting to do that. And I just don't think it's, you know, it's just going out for the money and trying to recreate something that was 50, you know, 60 years ago. Yeah. I don't know. But this is more a labor of love. But we kind of did it for Chris because he had such a bad year, you know. Tom died after producing his album, and then his house got burned in the fires in California.
Right.
And I thought, man, Chris has had a rough year. It was on his birthday. He went out to dinner on his birthday and came back and his house was on fire, you know. So it's kind of a labor of love.
I will say I am, however, talking with Mr. Crosby here in a few days. So if you need me to relay any messages, I'm happy to send those as well.
Well, I'll tell him I'm so happy for him that his Sky Trails tour is doing so well. I've been reading the reviews and, you know, he's just killing people everywhere he goes with Snarky Puppy and his Sky Trails band. It's just really cool stuff. And I'm all for him doing his solo stuff.
It's great stuff. And man, he's 5 albums in like 5 years or something like that. The man can't stop.
I know. He's making up for lost time.
Yeah, he is. Roger, this has been such an honor for me to talk to you about this. Thank you for taking the time. I'm looking forward to the show here at the Brown Theater. And congrats on, 50 years of a landmark classic record.
Well, thanks a lot, Kyle. It's good talking to you.
All right. We'll see you around.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. A big thanks to Roger McGuinn there, currently on tour with Chris Hillman and Marty Stewart for the 50th anniversary of Sweetheart at the Rodeo. As I mentioned at the beginning of this, and also within the interview with Roger McGuinn, I had also recently spoke with Chris Hillman when he was promoting his latest solo record, Bide My Time. And within that, we talked about how he thinks Tom Petty could have been the one to have gotten the Byrds back together. There's also lots more in this interview worth sharing. Please do check this one out as well. It's Kyle Meredith with Chris Hillman.
Hey, Kyle.
I'll start with the compliments. Bide My Time is a really fantastic record, man. You've outdone yourself.
Oh, well, I, Kyle, it's Tom Petty was an outstanding producer, and he got it out of me and guided me through the whole process. I mean, it's fantastic, and thank you for the compliment. I'm very happy with it, and probably the last conversation I had with Tom, I said, well, I can't tell you how much I appreciate this album and how it's such a great last record in my career, and he says, what are you talking about? We're not done yet. I've got other plans for you.
Oh.
And, you know, so there it is. But, yeah. Thank you.
What a thing to say and to leave you on. I mean, that, you know, on one side, that's got to be such a vote of confidence right there, you know, sort of a supercharge. I mean, how does that line leave you at this point?
Well, I'm very sad still that he left us so soon. And while I was working with him, which was last January into early February, he was fine. Nobody had any inkling of him having any issues with his heart and things. He had a knee that he needed to get fixed, but he was great. He was there every day on time in the studio. And Kyle, he would bring in coffee every morning. Not want somebody who worked for him. He'd bring in a tray of coffee to everybody, and it speaks exactly of who this man was. He was so humble, and it was hard. And I've sort of known him since 1978, but really got to know him in the last in the first 2 months of the year. And he's one of the most humble human beings. And it's hard for me to ever. I never could look at him as a rock star, and he is. He was such a huge force in music around the world. Huh? Yeah, it leaves me a little sad, but, you know, it was really tough while we were on the road when that happened. That was tough for everybody in the world. I think Tom, he really reached out to everyone. Everybody could identify with Tom Petty. He was like every man, you know. Yeah. That's the beautiful part of it.
Yeah, they became America's band. That's what I've been saying.
That's
the one we all could agree on. You know, whatever was going on politically,
right.
We had the Heartbreakers.
That's right. And he was the guy. He was the last rock star. I hate to say it like that, but he was. And he was just such a great musician. But we know that. Yeah, he was. He was America's band. It's perfect.
Well, with every bit of the respect to Tom, and I know we'll be talking about him off and on through this because you sort of have to. I don't want that to detract from this great record. You know, because, but with that, I guess, I mean, he does play the beginning of it, right? Because I think I'd read that you had sort of just kind of gave up on becoming a recording artist. Like, you weren't going to do any more records. Is that how the story goes?
Yeah, I felt that I didn't really have any intention of recording again. I said, well, I had a great time. Five decades, I had a great career, and I did everything I ever wanted to do, and then some. And then this sort of just fell in my lap, and I'll never forget. You might have read this where I said, I told Herb Peterson, I said, I better call Tom on this. I said, are you sure you want to do this? He said, well, do you want me to? I said, but can you make the commitment? He said, well, do you want me to do this? I said, yeah, I'd be thrilled to work with you. He said, well, let's do it. And there it was, and I had the funny line, and you probably read this one, but I said, you haven't even heard any of my songs. He said, I'm not worried. I said, but I'm worried. I don't know if they're right. He said, I'll tell you if I don't hear them, I'll tell you and we'll work on it or we'll go to get another song or something, which once again speaks volumes of the man and his skill at producing records as evidenced by all the great Heartbreaker records that came out.
And it's an interesting combination, the two of you, because Petty was so influenced by the Byrds. You know, he talked about that a lot for a long time. And I sort of wonder, like, you know, for him, this was probably even a bit of a, you know, a geek dream, a nerd dream, rock and roll nerds, you know, getting to do what they want to do finally. I mean, was there any sense of him wanting to find that classic sound and to retrace your steps in that way?
No, he didn't really ever come out with that. I sort of said, I want to cut the Gene Clark song, Gene, the original member of the Byrds. And Tom knew the song and he knew exactly what it was. And that sounds so much like the Byrds as I wanted it to be, but he is ever such subtle, inspiring things he would say or do in the studio. He got it out of me. He really got the performance, and he was encouraging. And there actually was one song, Kyle, that I thought we should cut, and he said, I don't hear that. And he said, why don't you work on it and come back? Let's hear it tomorrow. And I played it again the next day. And before he said anything, I said, you know what? I don't think it's right either. And then he said, have you ever cut this? I said, yeah. He said, well, why are we recording it again? So that was the only time. It was a joy. Every day in the studio with him and with the other guys, the Heartbreakers, was a joy. Yeah. Just a blessing for me.
Well, you know, as a fan, it is really fun to hear some of those little moments when you can kind of, you know, pinpoint eras. You know, I think there's been reviewers that says this is really an album that, you know, by purpose or not, sort of summarizes all of your strengths throughout your entire career. And like when I hear like She Don't Care About Time, I mean, the opening of that, mm-hmm. You know, I'm transformed suddenly, even though I've never heard this song. And I think that's one of the great characteristics about a great song right there. I mean, like, you know, those songs right there, was there ever that sense when you started those, or like, okay, this is going to be sort of, you know, Burritos, this is going to be sort of Birds, or does that just come out of you naturally like that?
Mm-mm. I just followed my instincts on it. You know, I finally, at the end of the record, Kyle, I said, this is almost like a concept, like you just said. I mean, there's some bluegrass type things that I did way back in my, when I started playing in 1963, 64, and then there's Bird stuff, and there, the Flying Burrito Brothers, yeah, there is one song. Biding My Time actually reminds me of the Burrito Brothers, mm-hmm. in a certain way, but it did take on that air of 50-year history of my music and all that. And as you may know, Walk Right Back was an accident that wasn't even going planned to be on the record. The Everly Brothers song, and Tom just heard us singing it in the studio, and he stopped everything, and we recorded it right there. He said, we got to put this on the album. He was absolutely right. It fit perfect.
And then to have something like Here She Comes Again, that one was never recorded, right?
Mm-mm. And it sounds so early Birds, 1965, first album or second album. And Roger McGuinn and I wrote that in 1979, and we played it once or twice live in McGuinn, Clark, and Hillman when we were going out with Gene Clark, and never cut it. And all I had to go on was a live performance that someone taped. But wow. I felt like someday I want to record this. It just has that, I love it. I love the hook to it. And Roger was always a joy to work with. He was always fun to be in the studio with or on stage. He was great, professional.
Yeah. Now, at what point had you decided, at what point in all this process did you say, let's invite McGuinn and Cross in here to be on the songs as well?
Well, I wanted to do Bells of Rimini, but only if David was able to had the time to sing on it, because I felt David and Herb together. Herb's another incredible tenor singer. In fact, David looks up to Herb in certain ways, and I wanted to sing that song with both of those guys, which we got to do. David was a champ, came down and spent an hour or two getting his part right on it, and Here She Comes Again, we had to have Roger on it because he was a co-writer and it was right up his alley. We tried to have him in the studio with us, but he was busy and he was back in Florida, so we sent him the files and he overdubbed back there, but he did great. So, yeah. And he's happy with it, so that's all that counts, you know.
I mean, there's so much history with all of you guys, you know, even if you're not in the same room, just to have those voices, you know, musicians blending at the same mm-hmm. time. You know, I started thinking about, like, you know, the careers you've had, and everybody's well grown up and moved around and had a lot of lives in between. And you know, for the history books and the way, so I'm 36, and, you know, the way I look at all of rock and roll, like, do you still feel like you're part of a generation and part of this, what I, you know, look at as a really important club within music?
I do feel that. I felt that the early to mid to late 60s was incredible musically. I never, ever, I'll hear a Beatles song on the radio from that period, early Beatles through, let's say, 67, Revolver, the album Revolver, and I never stop. I just love it. It still hits a nerve. And that period of time from when the Birds started in late 64 through to 1967, 68 was magical. I mean, for not only the Birds or the Beatles or the Rolling Stones, everybody. And it was such a new new sound in a way, and also the record companies were just starting to see that, and they were really functioning as creative entities. You know, they would sign you if you got signed to the label. They would stick with you through a couple of albums. It wasn't like you better sell platinum or you're off the label. You know, they stuck with you and nurtured you, and you're developing your sound. But yes, I do feel like I was part of a great club. I was a very lucky guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, that story, I get the call, can you play bass? Sure. I couldn't play bass. I didn't have a clue, you know. And it took me about, well, I'm probably by the second album I was figuring out, but I was sort of basing it on bluegrass rhythm guitar. It's totally interesting. But the Birds, what made the Birds unique was that we didn't really know what we were doing. We just plugged in and went for it, you know, and that was the magic, yeah.
It's sort of what makes the title a little bit funny, you know, saying all that, because Biding My Time is an interesting thing to say after, you know, 50 plus years.
And that song was written in 1987 and did not, we were going to record it in the Desert Rose Band, and it just didn't, it fell through the cracks. better that it's recorded now at the age I am, and after all, more years have passed. And it's interesting how people look at the meaning of "Bide My Time." I said, well, it's sort of like you're waiting. I don't know what you're waiting for, but it came out pretty well. I'm happy with that one. Never analyze your own music is my motto. Somebody will come up to me and say, I know what you meant on that song, and then they'll say something. I'm going, that's not exactly what I meant at all, but that's okay. You get some pleasure out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right.
I know we can't get out of here, of course, without talking about you also covering Wildflowers, one of Petty's greatest songs that kind of closes out the whole record. And, you know, I'm sure that takes on a completely different meaning for you now, as it does for a lot of us. But I kind of wondered, like, while you were doing it, is there any sense of, like, just don't screw this up because you're recording the song in front of the dude that wrote it?
No, I didn't ever feel that. And I wasn't even aware of that song. And it wasn't until Tom invited Herb and I to sing on the Music Cares banquet that he was being honored for. We were one of many acts that he asked to perform, and Herb brought Wildflowers. He said, I think this is the song we can do, really fits us, what we do. And I'd never heard it before, and then I said, we start working it up. I said, this is a great song. We need to record this. And I asked Tom's permission. I said, do you mind if we record Wildflowers? He said, no, I'd be honored. So I didn't really think about it. We just went out and sang it, you know, but as far as now, after we've lost the poor Tom, I mean, it takes on a lot a different meaning, especially the last verse, you know. Mm-hmm. You belong free of all trouble, and you belong in that home by and all this. And it's sort of a semi-autobiographical, I think, his song. Wow, it's a beautiful song, absolutely beautiful. And once again, Kyle, it just went on at the end of the record. We're putting the sequence together, and we said, let's close it with Wildflowers, and let's do this, and unbeknownst to any of us, what would transpire in the next 10 months, you know.
Yeah.
So it just was one of those perfect moments where everything fit together. And when I doubt if I could ever replicate anything on that level again, you know. He was a joy. I will say this without getting in trouble with David Crosby or Roger McGuinn. If anybody could have put the Birds back together for one album, it would have been Tom Petty, because he knew all of us really well.
Yeah.
That remains to be seen. So.
Well, if it ever needs to happen, at least you know that you've got Tom Petty in your corner. That,
I got, yeah, and the Heartbreakers too. So
that's right.
But anyway,
And you've written a book. Is that right?
Well, I have. I've got a manuscript. I obviously have to rewrite the epilogue, the end of the book. I have to rewrite that, which I'm going to tackle in January, after the holidays, and start really go through it again. And redo the end of it, and then I'll shop it. And there's one fella that's interested in representing the book, and we'll see what happens, you know. But I'll spend some time finishing that up, yeah. And most of that, Kyle, is about me growing up in a small town in California in the 1950s, and then being swept into music, and really starting with folk music and bluegrass, and then, like everybody else my age, the Beatles are on Ed Sullivan in February of 64, and it just, boy, that touched a nerve with everybody. So
right.
I remembered all the stories, and they're all nice. I don't put down anything that denigrates anybody I work with. I mean, I have only the good memories of people I worked with, and I had some interesting friends, still do. The ones that are still with us, I have still close relationships with.
Well, Chris, I can say that, you know, thank God to Tom Petty for having you do this record. And now that he's gone, you know, if it takes someone else to pull you to do it again, I really hope it does happen, because I really enjoy this. But I'll say, if you just decide never to record again, for whatever reason, this is an amazing close to that chapter, either way. So
you're very kind. I appreciate that, Kyle.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
No problem, Chris.
Yeah, and thank you for all your support and everything you guys do at WSPK.
All right, Chris.
So
thanks you so
very
much.
I appreciate you talking to me. Yeah, have a great Thanksgiving, my favorite holiday, the greatest.
All right, you too.
And have a great Thanksgiving, a good Christmas and New Year, and hopefully I'll see you down in Louisville at some point.
All right, come on down. Take care.
All right, buddy.
All right,
bud. Thank you very much.
Big thanks to Chris Hillman there. The solo record that came out in 2017 called Bide My Time. And again, thanks to Roger McGuinn as well for talking about Sweethearts of the Rodeo, the 50th anniversary tour of that one. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button if you haven't already, whether you're listening on YouTube or you're checking out the podcast version on iTunes or Podchaser, wherever you're getting it from. Hit that subscribe button. Give us a rating. Leave a review. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show every Monday through Thursday from noon to 3 Eastern, where you can also find some bonus episodes of this series. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store and online. And now, the more you buy, the more you save on beds, bases, and more. Plus, get free premium delivery on any bed with base. Limited time. For J.D. Power 2025 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Check it out at a Sleep Number store today.